This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays our respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to late 30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, listeners. You're tuned in to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. It is the 12th of February. Good morning, Inez. Good morning, Leela.
Good morning.
Good morning, Priya.
How's it going?
I literally cannot believe that we are already in like almost mid-Feb. Where has the time gone?
Yeah.
But as we were talking about last week, yeah, the year really only starts with the Lunar New Year.
Very true. So. I'm excited for the Year of the Horse. I've shed enough of the snake. I'm ready to power through
this year.
Yeah,
I think I'm done with the snake.
I'm done with snakes in general.
Yeah.
Many snakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
In our society.
Do you know that if you get bit by a snake, you're meant to lie down? I learned this in first aid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well here's a tip for you. Anybody's and out in the bushes.
Stay calm, they say.
Stay calm.
You're trying to avoid that blood flow.
Yeah.
You don't want that poison circulating.
And speaking of things that make my blood boil.
Oh.
I am so excited and angry to talk about lots of things that we're talking about today.
I am so excited and angry.
Excited to talk about it and bring awareness to it, but yeah. I'm just so frustrated that these things are still occurring.
Yeah, and that it feels like there's already so much of a chilling effect that I feel crazy when I'm talking on radio, even though I think about media law stuff.
Yep.
And I'm like, I don't know what I can say. I know what I believe.
Yes.
And everything feels, you know, it feels like the walls are closing in, but also we can't fall for the idea that there's nothing we can do.
Never.
Yes. Yep. There's always something that can be done.
Yep.
And I guess jumping into what we have got on for today, we're going to start off by hearing from Leilana, who's a lead marshal from Community Defense Marshalling System. And Leilana is joining us to discuss the fight for justice by Bangladeshi migrant workers subjected to unlawful and appalling treatment by Malaysian company Medisaram, a glove mold supplier of NARM-based multi-billion-dollar latex corporation Ansell. And while Medisaram has gone bankrupt after years of alleged labor violations, including things like passport confiscation, wage theft, debt bondage, and unsafe working conditions, Ansell has, despite having profited from these practices, chosen to abandon Medisaram workers. So there is going to be a rally this Saturday to fight slavery in the supply chain at 5 p.m. At Ansell's Richmond headquarters. So we'll have more information about that in the interview. But yeah, a really, really important struggle.
And at 7:30, we're going to be joined by Emma Bennison, the CEO of Disability Advocacy Network Australia, or DANA, to understand more about NDIA's adoption of AI for the development and review of NDIS plans. There is widespread concern from disability representative organisations about the use of computer automated systems to determine how people with living disabilities access support, and that impacts every part of people's lives. And today, Emma will unpack how AI is being used by the NDIA, who these systems impact most, and how they might change NDIS plan review processes.
Yeah, such an important interview. And then we'll be joined by Renee, a NARM-based organiser, who joins us to discuss today's rally against Israeli President Isaac Herzog, visiting NARM today at the Melbourne Convention Exhibition Centre. That is follows his visit to Sydney, which legal observers and groups have described as unchecked police violence and brutality, including the possession of a long-range acoustic device, an LRAD, which is a militarized crowd control device emitting a sound of over 160 decibels, which can cause permanent hearing damage. And for reference, like a regular loud concert is around 100 decibels. So that's 160 decibels. And then we also had New South Wales Premier Chris Minns defend the president's visit, as well as the actions taken by police, which legal observers have also noted. You know, you can join the rally today, Thursday the 14th of February, 5 p.m. at Flinders Street Station. It was originally at Southern Cross, but now it is 5 p.m. at Flinders Street.
Yes, hopefully the 5 p.m. time will mean that a lot more people can make it as well. And then after that, we are going to be joined by Gunachamara Kire Wurrung and Japurung runner Sissy Austin, who is founder of the Take Back the Track movement. And Sissy is going to speak with us about the ongoing fight to ensure the safety and bodily autonomy of women and gender diverse people running in public space in the lead up to Take Back the Track Day on Sunday, the 15th of February. This is the second year that Take Back the Track Day has run. And we will have information about how you can register to run at one of the 70 locations around the country where events are being held. So stay tuned. You're listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. And we'll be back to you shortly with the news headlines.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air. Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Go to 3cr.org.au or call 03 9419 8377.
These are the news headlines for Thursday, the 12th of February. In continued violations of what they claim to be a ceasefire, Israeli airstrikes and artillery shelling hit areas east of Khan Yunis in Gaza this week. The Israel are allowing small, controlled groups of wounded Palestinians to return to Gaza through the Rafah crossing in areas they continue to bomb. Around 40 patients were transferred to Nasser Hospital this week, and the Palestinians reported being subjected to humiliating searches and interrogations by the Israeli army, significantly prolonging their journey. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli raids continue, subjecting Palestinians to tear gas attacks in Hebron, the detainment of many, including a 14-year-old child, the Israeli government's decision this week to ease land registration rules in the West Bank has raised fears of de facto annexation, and the United Nations Palestinian Refugee Agency warning that measures undermine international law. Meanwhile, Israel is reportedly accelerating preparations for the execution of Palestinian prisoners, including plans for dedicated facilities and procedures, as a proposed death penalty bill advances through the national parliament.
In other news this week, as Israel's genocide and occupation continue, its president is welcomed by federal and state governments in so-called Australia. In response, tens of thousands of people continue to rally across more than 30 cities and towns to oppose the visit of Isaac Herzog. Protesters condemn the Albanese government's decision to host a leader accused of incitement to genocide and demand his arrest. Earlier this week, despite draconian anti-protest powers imposed by the Minns government in Gadigal country, Sydney, more than 30,000 protesters were met with riot police and mounted units, violently forcing protesters to move on while also surrounding and confining them and indiscriminately firing pepper spray. Footage and eyewitness accounts show police assaulting peaceful demonstrators, including Muslim worshippers at prayer, hospitalizing elderly people and arresting at least 27 protesters. Civil society groups condemn what they called a terrible erosion of civil liberties. And legal experts are calling for an independent investigation into New South Wales police violence against the protesters. Despite the government crackdowns, protests have continued consistently, including planned protests against Herzog's arrival in Naam today. Protesters will gather at Flinders Street Station at 5 p.m. today to protest against the Allen government's welcoming of the Israeli president.
Also in news this week, ancient Gunai Kurnai scar trees and river red gums along the Sale Canal are at risk of collapse as erosion exacerbated by invasive European carp and unmanaged water flows eats away at the riverbanks. While the Catchment Management Authority says they will work with Gunai Kurnai Lands and Waters Aboriginal Corporation to address the damage, no concrete plans have been announced to stabilise the canal, even after Wellington Shire Council spent $1.7 million on upgrading boating infrastructure at the nearby port of Sale.
Finally, in headlines this week, a legal challenge brought by the Australian Uyghur Tungratha Women's Association against Kmart was heard in the federal court on Tuesday, seeking documents to determine whether the retailer misled consumers about potential links between its suppliers and Uyghur forced labour. The case comes amid growing scrutiny of the Australian government's modern slavery laws and could pave the way for claims that Kmart breached consumer law if it failed to properly monitor forced labour risks in its supply chain. These have been the news headlines for Thursday, the 12th of February. You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM.
The Electronic Intifada is Palestine's weapon of mass instruction.
Netanyahu's at the zenith of his genocidal career.
These people committed atrocities.
This is a war on children, essentially.
Tune into Electronic Intifada Radio for interviews, reports, and analysis. Thursdays at 7 p.m. on 855 AM, 3CR Digital, and online at 3cr.org.au.
This is starvation. Time is running out.
And I don't believe in fighting today in any one front, but on all fronts. In fact, I'm a black nationalist freedom fighter.
This country is a nation of thieves.
Now, we're never going to get justice here in these filthy racist courts here.
Our people have been massacred, and we're not supposed to grieve for that. We've got to do something more drastic if we're serious about this.
Move over or we gonna move on over you.
Yilliman with Kieran Stewart-Asherton on 3CR. Dives deep into Indigenous resistance and global anti-colonial struggles. Featuring frontline activists, it confronts Australia's identity, challenges power structures, and fuels revolutionary discourse. Wednesdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
You're tuned in to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and it is just coming up on 7:13 in the morning. And we are now joined by Leliana, a lead marshal from Community Defence Marshalling System, who is speaking with us about the fight for justice by Bangladeshi migrant workers who have been subjected to unlawful and appalling treatment by Malaysian company Mediseram, a glove mould supplier of NARM-based multi-billion dollar latex corporation Ansell. Now, while Mediseram has gone bankrupt after years of alleged labour violations, including passport confiscation, wage theft, debt bondage, and highly unsafe working conditions, Ansell, despite having profited from these practices, has chosen to abandon Mediseram workers. Now, the Slavery in the Supply Chain rally is going to be held at 5 p.m. on Saturday, the 14th of February, that's this coming Saturday, at Ansell's head office, which is located at 678 Victoria Street in Richmond, mobilizing Australian worker solidarity with migrant workers impacted by Mediseram's violations and Ansell's neglect. Now, good morning, Leliana. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, good morning, Priya. It's lovely to, lovely to be here.
Yeah, I really appreciate you bringing this issue to everyone's attention. And I know this comes off the back of, years of struggle and organizing by Bangladeshi migrant workers who have just been subjected to the most brutal and appalling conditions. Now, can you start off by talking about the labour violations that Mediseram is alleged to have engaged in by migrant workers over, the past five at least years. And I guess more broadly about how Australian companies like Ansell profit off modern slavery while keeping these practices notionally at arm's length.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe like, you know, it's also on my mind, like, you know, maybe the better question to ask really is like, what don't they do? You know, in this situation with workers from Metastorm, you know, we've been in close contact with them and we've seen practically everything on the table. They've been kept in, you know, absolute squalor, like real squalor. They've had physical intimidation, you know, threats to livelihoods. They've been kept in debt bondage. They've had, you know, their passports confiscated. I mean, it's been, you know, very, very deeply inhumane. Some of the key things that have been alleged sort of against Metastorm more broadly have been predominantly about the confiscation of passports and extremely high recruitment fees that has sort of put these workers in debt. You know, recruitment fees that they can't really pay off with the tiny, tiny wages they're getting from these companies who are also, you know, engaging in these practices of forced labour, you know, through all sorts of means of intimidation, the law, police, you know, even, how do I say, extra legal means of intimidation. But, you know, so the situation is one of very, very deep corruption. In terms of, you know, how Ansell specifically has profited off of these practices, I mean, you know, first of all, you mentioned that this has been a long campaign over the last, you know, nearly 5 years now, specifically around, like, some of these key issues in Malaysia and Sri Lanka. So there are other companies that have had these sort of these issues raised in the OECD, in union advocacy, Asia Link, and workers' solidarity, things like Kimberly-Clark and Supermax. But Ansell very specifically has done a lot to sort of obfuscate their role but maintain the profits they gain from having cheap supplies of these glove molds and, you know, generally, like, profiting quite greatly from these products. I mean, you know, there's a very clear correlation between cheap gloves at Woolworths and, you know, very cheap forced labour in Malaysia and Sri Lanka and other countries.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Bangladeshi migrant workers who have been subjected to this treatment have been actively fighting against company exploitation since as early as 2021. Can you tell us about what their industrial action has looked like and Metastorm's retaliation?
Yeah, so I believe the most recent round of strikes came around in late last year, around October, following the death of one of the workers at Metastorm. The company, like, refused to release the body to the family, and the workers had to pay very exorbitant fees just to allow the worker's body to be returned to Bangladesh. So this was, you know, a very big inciting incident for the strike. Metastorm, in turn, well, you know, I mean, they deported hundreds of the workers. They physically intimidated them. They, you know, continuously lied about the return of passport, the paying back of debts that Metastorm had to the workers. Instead of, you know, paying back these debts, returning the property, Metastorm, you know, went out of their way to forcibly deport the workers on the basis that they didn't have visas, that Metastorm themselves was keeping locked in a safe away from the workers, right? So throughout the situation, Metastorm, you know, continuously sort of empowered itself in this position where if the workers ever complained about the situation of forced labour, Metastorm would just, you know, tell the authorities, hey, can you please get rid of these people?
Yeah, it is just reprehensible the way that people are have been put into debt bondage and then have their immigration status held over their heads as a way to, you know, coerce silence about labor practices. But, you know, workers have been standing up and speaking out and raising their complaints in a variety of fora. I understand Metastorm is now bankrupt, and Ansell has apparently suspended relations with Medisaram. Can you clarify what's going on there?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it's a funny situation, right? A company that goes bankrupt after not paying their workers for months and months. It's, you know, the entire sort of circumstance around Medisaram's bankruptcy is, you know, definitely cause for some suspicion. Ansel, as a member of the Responsible Business Association and, you know, self-proclaimed in accordance with the OECD, ANZL has, like, particular legal responsibilities both to the Australian government and to international law or international business associations to ensure that slavery and forced labour is not happening in their supply chain, and yet they've, you know, taken a lot of the glove molds from Medisaram. So ANZL has been, you know, in a very funny particular position where these ongoing cases in Bangladesh and Malaysia have continuously sort of, you know, pointed their sight at ANZL, especially after Medisaram's bankruptcy. But ANZL, you know, has continuously sort of played around the rules, whether that's, you know, like not going through the delegated intermediary for the finances that the workers have won in some of these legal cases around it, or whether that's, you know, sort of continuing to deny the idea that the workers had legally engaged in a strike. Mm. These are all things that ANZL has sort of supported or engaged with in the Malaysian courts. So while ANZL kind of self-proclaims that they, you know, are an ethical company, they don't engage in these practices, we can see very directly, actually, they are, you know, in the courtroom saying, no, this is not a legal strike. We you know, support our partner, Medisaram, whatever else, you know.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think, you know, this is just such a clear case that you can't necessarily take a company's domestic disclosures that it is, or domestic proclamations, I guess, that it is adhering to modern slavery regulations. It is really important to actually interrogate what those supply chain partnerships look like and what workers that are employed within those partner companies are actually saying about the conditions that they're forced to labor under. And I know that, you know, this deportation of workers has resulted in extreme hardship for them. They're, you know, many of them continue to be heavily indebted. So there's continuing fights going on, as you mentioned, in the Malaysian and Bangladeshi courts. What avenues of appeal have these workers pursued in international labor rights for to seek justice? You mentioned the OECD is one of those, you know, organizations that ANZL should technically be accountable to.
Yeah, so it's a good question. I think the legal avenues for the workers haven't been necessarily the best, right? Like Medisaram is not the only case in which there is modern slavery in Southeast Asia, or even necessarily connected to ANZL. You know, historically, a few years ago, there was a case in Sri Lanka of very similar practices with ANZL, you know, being part of that supply chain as well. But very specifically, what these workers have had access to is international solidarity. What the workers have had access to also has been, you know, some legal avenues. So Migrant Workers Network, which operates out of Bangladesh and Malaysia, has been, you know, very deeply involved in their case. Andy Hall, who is, you know, a very prolific investigator and activist in this area, has been pushing a lot of this, you know, legal complaint. But also kind of at the top of this, in that legal area of the OECD and et cetera, it kind of has been going around in a bit of a bureaucratic circle. You know, a review by the OECD was supposed to be due back in December of last year, and it still hasn't been released. Mm. However, there has been very significant action in the union. So, for example, the Nurses and Midwives Union went on strike. Oh, sorry, not strike. They went on boycott a few years ago against this, and that was, you know, very effective. So while the workers haven't had many exact legal avenues through the mainstream system to fight this. The workers' solidarity has been, you know, absolutely essential.
Yeah. And I did want to ask you a little bit more about the role and responsibility of Australian unions and workers proactively identifying and resisting modern slavery practices in the sort of supply chains that enable their day-to-day works in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, these are our neighbours, right? Like, Indonesia, Philippines, Malaysia, Sri Lanka, they're, you know, they're right next to us. From a basic, you know, kind of clarity of the economic situation, right? Like, a lot of our supplies come through them. The trade routes go through Southeast Asia, they go through Indonesia, they go through Bangladesh, they go through Malaysia. So to this sense, right, like, Australia is part of the Southeast Asian economy. We are incredibly integrated into the movement of goods and money in this region. To that end, the Australian economy has a lot of power, right? We have a lot of power to actually make a difference, you know, for our neighbours, for ourselves, for each other, because this is our local region. This is our neighbourhood. This is where we are. So worker solidarity in Australia is very essential. You know, there's a reason, right, that ANZAL, who gets all of their supplies in Southeast Asia, sets up base in Australia, right? Like, you know, ANZAL supplies all over the world. ANZAL is supplying to Europe, the US, Australia, and many other countries. But ANZAL chooses to be here in Australia. That's where their headquarters are, over in Richmond. And to that end, right, like, why are they here? Because that's where they're getting all their goods from, right over there, right across the border from us.
Yeah, and I guess this leads me to my final question about the slavery and the supply chain rally, where, you know, workers are going to be taking to the streets in solidarity with Bangladeshi migrant workers who have experienced these extreme labour violations that you've discussed, and that's coming up this Saturday at ANZAL's Richmond headquarters. What's planned for the day, and how can our listeners lend their support?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a good question. We'll be having a number of speeches. Jerome Small from Socialist Socialist Party, and Mamaroneck Amaro will be speaking at the rally. We're hoping to get, you know, significant attendance just for the sake of solidarity. I think also the fact that it'll be happening in the evening on Valentine's Day, you know, is very significant. But also, you know, if workers want to be involved, want to care about these issues, join their unions, talk to their organisers, make it an issue, right? Like, that's where these things move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, it is just so... I don't know if ironic is the right term, but that, you know, a company that so many industries purchase from to supply their workers with PPE is also a company that is engaged in extreme, you know, worker exploitation in its own supply chains.
Yeah. That's exactly right. There's a deep irony in the fact that, you know, these companies that service us in Australia and people in Europe and the US, you know, we get to benefit from all of these protective equipment that the workers themselves who are making the protective equipment don't get.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Yeah. This is a little bit off topic, but, you know, community defence marshalling system is deeply invested in solidarity across the board. We will be at the Anti-Herzog rally this evening, 5 p.m. At Flinders Street. We hope to see our allies, our friends, our comrades there today.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Leliana. I really appreciate your time.
No problem.
And that was Leliana, who's a lead marshal from Community Defence Marshalling System. And Leliana spoke with us about the fight for justice by Bangladeshi migrant workers that have been subjected to unlawful and appalling treatment by Malaysian company Mediseram, which is a glove mold supplier of NARM-based multi-billion dollar multinational latex corporation ANZAL. And the Slavery in the Supply Chain rally is going to be held at 5 p.m. on Saturday, the 14th of February, this coming Saturday, at Ansell's head office, 678 Victoria Street, Richmond, mobilizing Australian worker solidarity with migrant workers that have been impacted by Medisaram's violations and Ansell's neglect and avoidance of responsibility.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalisation intersect where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Abolition.
Anti-racism.
Sex worker rights.
South liberation.
Disability justice.
Anti-imperialism.
Decolonisation.
An end to borders.
Workers' justice.
And so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo! You're listening to Thursday Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and it has just hit 7:31 in the morning. And now I am really looking forward to welcoming Emma Bennison, CEO of Disability Advocacy Network Australia, who's going to help us understand more about NDIA's adoption of AI for the development and review of NDIS plans. There is widespread concern from disability representative organisations about the use of computer automated systems to determine and make decisions on how people living with disabilities access their supports. And today, Emma will unpack exactly how AI is being used by the NDIA, who these systems might impact most, and how they might change the NDIS plan review processes. Good morning, Emma. Welcome to Thursday Breakfast.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I thought we could start by giving a short overview of how exactly NDIS plans work, because it is a bit complicated. Could you give us a reminder of how they work?
Absolutely. I mean, at its best, a plan should be a tool that helps people with disability live our lives the way that we want to. A plan needs to be individualised, needs to be flexible, so that we can have the choice and control that we need. Plans are based around goals. So to give you an example, I have an NDIS plan. I'm blind, and my plan helps me get regular exercise. It helps me attend events. It helps me keep my job, helps me serve on voluntary boards, helps me be a parent. Just to name a few. but the funding in the plan then needs to match those goals. And, you know, that's through the provision of everything from support workers to therapeutic services, adaptive technology or equipment. In practice, though, that's often not what people experience. Many plans don't actually reflect participants' lives. And in those cases, people can feel like their plans have been done to them rather than with them. So, you know, for people with disability, it's not like it's just an abstract piece of paper. It really can determine whether people can have a shower, whether they can leave the house, whether they can work, whether they can feel safe, you know. So when it goes wrong, it's more than just kind of an administrative error, because it really affects people's independence, people's well-being and people's sense of control. So the gap, you know, between what it is meant to do and what some participants currently experience is really, I guess, at the heart of why many participants and families are struggling with the system at the moment.
Yeah, thank you for that, Emma. And I'm a support worker myself, so I can see firsthand how much impact an NDIS plan has on quality of life for people living with a disability. And it really is a determination of life quality for a lot of people.
Yeah, and when it's working well, it can be life-changing. I mean, my life is so much richer. I think it's important to make that point, so much richer as a result of the scheme. So it's not about bashing it. It's just about making sure it works for everyone.
Yeah, acknowledging the significance of this system and what a big impact it has.
Mm.
The NDIA has begun using artificial intelligence, or AI, to generate these NDIS plans that hold so much weight in people's lives. And they've also started using it in the review process. Can you explain how AI systems are being used by the NDIA and some of your concerns about that?
Sure. So let me start by just talking a little bit about plan reviews, because it's important to understand what they are. So a plan review is often about making sure that the support actually meets people's needs. So often it's, you know, it can happen formally, so on a schedule when the NDIA looks at a person's supports to check whether, you know, the goals have changed or the funding is correct or whether the plan still matches the person's reality. But it can also happen when the person requests a review because circumstances have changed. So, you know, maybe someone's moved into a different living situation or their impairment situation has changed. But the government's now proposing a new planning framework that focuses on assessing people's support needs rather than their functional impairments. And, you know, they say that that'll make it simpler and fairer and more person-centred. And so
Emma,
Would
you be able to explain the difference between supports, needs and functional impairments for those people that aren't familiar with those terms?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we're talking about functional impairment, you know, we're talking about what someone can actually do independently or not as a person with disability as a result of their impairment. When we're talking about support needs, we're talking about it in a much more positive framing of what support needs do people actually need to eliminate the functional impairment. So to give you an example, you know, I am using a Braille display right now to look at my notes, read my notes. If I didn't have that, I'd have to rely on my memory. I probably wouldn't be very articulate. I mean, that's just a terrible example. But you know, it's just a way of saying, let's look at what people actually need to live, you know, lives to their full capacity, rather than saying, let's look at what people can't do.
Yeah, thank you so much for that bit of context. And now back onto the plan review process and how that relates to...
So I think it's important to give the context, because they say that this new planning framework is going to make it fairer and more person-centred, and it sounds really great, but I think, you know, what really is going to matter in practice is how people experience it. So one of our concerns is that the review pathways might change, and that might make it harder to challenge decisions. Mm-hmm. And this is important when we talk about AI, because under the proposed new model, participants would still be able to request reviews, but based on what information we have so far, there are concerns that the Administrative Review Tribunal might not be able to actually make a ruling that would result in a change to a person's plan. So they might only be able to send it back to the NDIS and say, have another look at it. And so that could really limit a person's ability to challenge. So when it comes to the use of AI and automated decision making, we are seeing reports that the NDIA is moving towards the use of AI and machine learning to help in developing plans. And that includes, you know, forms of automated decision making where computers are analysing information to generate recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also happening alongside some announcements about a new framework for AI-assisted technology being funded as part of NDIS supports. Now, I should say, personally, I'm a huge fan of AI. I benefit from it every single day as a blind person. It describes images to me. It helps me edit documents, all sorts of things that are really difficult for a blind person. So I'm not against it at all. But the thing that worries us, I think, is that the NDIS is about people, and often people that have very complex needs. And so there can be real life consequences if this was to go wrong. So our concern is that computer generated plans could be used to inform decisions about people's daily lives, and that there's a risk that the computer might not fully grasp the nuances and complexities of people's experiences. So we're really hoping that measures remain in place to make sure human judgment is always employed in assessments, because, you know, technology can be great, but it really needs to be supported by humans and not replace human decision making.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we also really want to make sure that people with disability are involved in designing these systems from the ground up. So
yeah,
it's really important.
Yeah, it needs to be used strategically. By the people, you know, that the decisions are being made about. Now, you mentioned a bit about how these systems kind of use the data that they've got.
Mm.
How could they potentially impact groups of people that are already underrepresented in data, such as First Nations people, women and gender diverse people, and those with complex or multiple disabilities, and people who don't speak English?
Yeah, there's a real concern about this because, you know, we know that AI data is often, you know, quite homogenous. It doesn't always include, you know, doesn't always include the experiences of people with intersectionalities, like as you've mentioned. So, and you know, the concern that we have is that automation often tends to work best in really standardised settings. And, of course, people with disability are very unique. Even people with disability with the same impairments and the same intersectionalities have very unique needs. You know, if we look, for example, at people with intellectual disability, people with psychosocial disability, people who have complex communication needs, episodic conditions, fluctuating experiences, you know, it's much more likely that a computer is going to misunderstand those needs, and you know, as are rigid assessment models, even if they're not AI models. But I think there's a really positive way forward. I mean, AI has real merits, and it's not going to go away. So I think, you know, the key is that we need to make sure that, as I said, that human judgment is not replaced, and that AI can inform decision making, but that people with disability still need to have, you know, genuine human oversight, strong review rights, and meaningful ways to explain what we need in our own words. That still really matters. And I think if we got that balance right, then there's real potential to improve the fairness and improve access, rather than locking people into plans that really don't reflect their lives just because we want to make it quicker and easier and cheaper and more standardised. So, yeah, I think that's really important.
Yeah, thank you for that insight. Now, there are privacy concerns, understandably. What are the privacy rights for NDIS participants, and can a person decide whether or not their information is used by automated systems?
Well, look, Australia obviously has privacy laws, and those laws do apply to government agencies like the NDIA, but currently there aren't any kind of clear and specific rules about how AI and automated decision-making can be used in systems like the NDIS. So that creates uncertainty for participants, and many really don't know how our info is being used and whether automated systems are involved in decisions about plans and what level of choice that people might have in that process. So I guess from our perspective, what matters most is that people with disability are respected, informed and protected. You know, data and technology and policies really need to be designed with us at the centre. And people need to understand what's happening with their information so they can trust the system. You know, I think stronger safeguards really are essential to make sure that we don't cause unintentional harm in this space.
Yeah. I think people living with a disability can't have autonomy and decision-making power without that transparency. So to wrap up today, Emma, what are disability representative organisations calling for exactly in response to these concerns?
Well, in a nutshell, we're calling for transparency, safeguards and genuine partnerships with people with disability. So we really want the NDIA to be open about where and how automated decision-making and AI are being used, and how much human oversight is being employed. You know, we really deserve to know how decisions are being made about our lives. So we need that. We're also calling for clear, accessible information and ongoing community briefings at every stage of the new planning framework that I talked about earlier. And that includes an explanation of how support needs assessments are going to be used and how they actually translate into budgets. We're asking for clarity about the review rights that I spoke about earlier. We really need to know whether the new framework plans can be meaningfully challenged, both internally and at the ART. And finally, we really are calling for genuine co-design. We need people with disability leading the design process, not being consulted, you know, after the fact. Because at the end of the day, you know, as I said before, this is about trust, and these changes are going to affect people's lives. So people with disability really need to be at the centre of designing them.
Yeah, Emma, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate your time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Bye. We just heard from Emma Bennison, the CEO of Disability Advocacy Network Australia, to understand more about NDIA's adoption of AI and automated systems for the development and review of NDIS plans. There has been widespread concern across the board from disability representative organisations about the use of computer automated systems to make really big decisions about the plans that determine how people living with disabilities access support. And today, Emma unpacked exactly how AI is being used by the NDIA in plan reviews, who these systems might impact most, and how they might change the NDIS plan review processes. And something to remember there that Emma finished on is how important co-design is. And that's something that disability advocacy organisations have been calling for a really long time. So that was, yeah, a really important thing to end on. You're listening to Thursday Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey.
I'm Alphonse.
I'm Erwin.
And we are from the Voice of West Papua.
Tuesday, 6:30 until 7:30 p.m.
News and music from West Papua.
And I don't believe in fighting today in any one front, but on all fronts. In fact, I'm a black nationalist freedom fighter.
This country is a nation of thieves.
Now, we're never going to get justice here in these filthy racist courts here.
Our people have been massacred, and we're not supposed to grieve for that. We've got to do something more drastic if we're serious about this.
Move over or we gonna move on over you.
Yilliman with Kieran Stewart-Asherton on 3CR dives deep into Indigenous resistance and global anti-colonial struggles. Featuring frontline activists, it confronts Australia's identity, challenges power structures, and fuels revolutionary discourse. Wednesdays, 12 to 1pm.
Welcome back to 3CR Thursday Breakfast. It's 7:49. And now we are joined by Renee, a Naam-based organiser, joining us to discuss today's rally against Israeli President Isaac Herzog, visiting Naam today at the Melbourne Convention Exhibition Centre. Now, this follows the amazing turnout for Monday's rally, but also follows his Sydney visit, which legal observers and groups described as unchecked police violence, including the possession of a long-range acoustic device, which is a militarised crowd control device emitting a sound of over 160 decibels and can cause permanent hearing damage, while New South Wales Premier Chris Minns defended the President's visit. And thank you so much for joining us here today, Renee, to talk about this really important rally.
Thanks for having me.
Could you tell us more about why you have called the rally for today, as well as how it was on Monday, and what Isaac Herzog is doing in Naam in the first place?
Yeah, so we called an entire week of action this week in Melbourne, but also on Monday had a nationwide protest against the visit of the President of Israel, Isaac Herzog, to Australia. So I'm a part of Students for Palestine, but also one of the organisers of the Central Melbourne Rally for Palestine. And I think this is one of the most important things we've done over the past 2 years. The invitation that was extended to Isaac Herzog by Albanese is just an absolute disgrace, considering the, you know, role that Isaac Herzog has played over the past 2 years in Palestine, being one of the people who has directly overseen and carried out the Gaza genocide, has overseen and carried out expulsions, mass expulsions, and ethnic cleansing in the West Bank, and has been, you know, was found by the UN as one of the people who was proven to incite genocide against the Palestinians. I think that, you know, the reason the Labour Party and Albanese has invited him here is to try to rehabilitate their relationship with Israel, rehabilitate, you know, kind of the image of Israel amongst the population of Australia, who for the past 2 years have, you know, participated in some of the biggest and most sustained protests in support of Palestine and against the genocide, but also has been an attempt by the government to cynically exploit the, you know, horrifying massacre in Bondi for their own political gain. And we've kind of seen that come up again and again. You know, as you said, in Sydney, you know, the, yeah, Chris Minns and the police there have constantly accused the pro-Palestine movement of anti-Semitism. And recently in Queensland, they've tried to ban the phrase "from the river to the sea" for being anti-Semitism and inciting hate. We totally reject all of that. And I think actually it's deeply important that all of us, you know, actually take responsibility to come out and protest against this man while he's in the country. So on Monday, we saw a brilliant, fantastic turnout all across Australia. In Melbourne, there was 15,000 people. In Sydney, there was 20,000. And then in 20 other cities and towns across the country, you know, thousands and thousands of people came out. It was, yeah, pretty horrifying to see the response of the police in Sydney, which, yeah, was just like, you know, despicable, like fascistic thugs coming out, peddling supporters of Palestine, ripping Muslims from the ground while they pray. But, you know, that's kind of in line with the way that the police have acted towards the Palestine movement over the past 2 years.
Yeah, but thank you for sharing that and putting it in context. I think it is one of the most important rallies that we can attend. And, you know, speaking about, you know, the constriction of protest laws, you know, across the continent, it's so it's so clear what the double standard is, where you see for like the March for Australia and these neo-Nazis.
Yeah, totally.
And the homemade, you know, bomb that was thrown on Invasion Day, and the absolute difference in how the police are treated for people who are on the side of the colonial force. I was interested to know what it has been like to, yeah, organize this rally kind of in this current protest constrictive law climate. And yeah, if there were any learnings that you had from, yeah, Monday's rally or, yeah, what we're seeing from the violence from Sydney.
Yeah, well, I think in Melbourne, we've, you know, the entire Palestine movement and all of the organisers were totally, you know, for the idea of doing a week of action against this man and against the Australian government for inviting him here. We've been, you know, the police, obviously we haven't seen the same response here in Melbourne as they have in Sydney. They, you know, obviously had the extreme show of force on Monday. And, yeah, like just violence from the police, you know, tens of people arrested. And then on Tuesday they had another rally where they were banned from marching. I think in Melbourne, some of the lessons that we've learned from, you know, Palestine Action Group in Sydney is having an, you know, orientation to organising for Palestine, which is mass, so bringing in as many people as we can to the Palestine movement. That was really an orientation we had for Monday, was trying to bring as many people into the movement as possible, anybody that's been to Palestine rallies over the past 2 years. And it was important that we had that kind of mass, you know, like show on Monday of support because of, you know, the just the offensive from the government, from the cops, from the media about, yeah, these rallies, they, you know, that they were going to be violent. But yeah, we wanted to bring as many people in as possible. So I, you know, there was people at the rally who I spoke to on Monday night who had never been to a Palestine rally before. Over the past 2 years, this is the first one they've ever come to,
wow,
which was pretty, you know, fantastic that there's still new people coming into the movement. And, of course, that's what we want. I talked to one woman who was an older woman who said she'd never been to a protest in her entire life and lived through Vietnam and Iraq and opposed those but never felt like she needed to come out. But this is what drew the line for her, the fact that they brought the president of Israel to Australia. So, you know, we want to orient to those types of people as well as, you know, the existing, you know, pool of people who come to rallies. But also, yeah, I think we want to be pretty oppositional to the cops in the Palestine movement and see that they're not at the rallies to protect us. They're not on our side at all. They're on the side of the government, of, you know, of the Israeli president. Yeah, that's who they want to protect. And they're not, you know, at the rallies to protect us. So that's pretty important, I think, as well.
Yeah, thank you so much for saying that. And, you know, broader movement coalition building is so vital, particularly with how many numbers we need and how militarised our police keeps getting. And I know that hearing and seeing a lot of the footage and, yeah, being there in Sydney and across the continent, it can be really jarring and worrisome of, like, oh, should I go out to this? I'm going to be scared. But I know that there's so much hope and invigoration in protesting and building with others. And, yeah, I'm wondering if you can, yeah, reflect on people who maybe are worried about coming or, yeah, just how to keep themselves and each other safer.
Yeah, well, I think in Melbourne tonight, we hopefully will not be seeing any of the type of violence that we saw in Sydney on Monday. And, of course, we have power in numbers, so the more people that come out, you know, the better off that our side is. But I think also we have to remember the context of what's happening, and what's happening in Palestine, I think, is the most important thing. We heard from Al Jazeera yesterday that Israel used illegal U.S. Thermal weapons, which evaporated 3,000 Palestinians, which were weapons that were so hot that there was nothing left of Palestinians. They couldn't even find their bones, just blood. That is what's happening in Gaza right now. There is, you know, this has been the deadliest week for Palestinians in Gaza since the so-called ceasefire. Israel continues to carry out airstrikes and bombings of refugee camps and of schools and of shelters for civilians. I just think the most important thing is showing up for the people in Palestine. This week has been, I think, history-making. The fact that Anthony Albanese, everything his party has ever done for Palestine is total crap. They do not stand with Palestine. They are on the side of Israel. And he's tried to take away the fundamental rights of people in this country to demonstrate, to free speech, to facilitate this war criminals peaceful tour around Australia. So tonight he'll be in Melbourne. It'll also be his last day in Australia. So we need as many people as possible who care about Palestine to take to the streets with us to give this guy, you know, his final farewell from this country. And, you know, while the government and the media try to say that actually, you know, Australia supports Israel, we want to take to the streets and say, no, absolutely not. There is mass opposition to this man being here and to his genocide in Gaza, and we want to show that tonight.
Yeah, thank you. It's so, so important. And we will also put notes in our show notes from like legal services and legal observers about if you're going to a protest, how can you make yourself safer for security, you know, having a friend or a lawyer's number on your arm, having the legal observers card. And I know that, will there be legal observers at the rally as well as medics?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And also I just saw that the Melbourne Activist Legal Service recently put out a community notice about the Victorian Police Special Powers. Would you be able to briefly speak about that? But we can also read out the slideshow after our interview too.
Yeah, it's they've given the Victorian Police Special Powers for today under terrorism legislation, which gives them the power to, search anybody without, suspecting that they've committed a crime and without a warrant. So, anybody that's coming to the rally tonight should be careful about what they bring with them.
Yeah.
And the, police will have special powers. But, this is something that they generally do when we demonstrate for Palestine, is give the police special powers, which is, shows the hypocrisy of we've got a, war criminal walking around this country and they want to stop and search regular people protesting against the genocide. But, I think people should take the precautions they would normally take to come to a Palestine demonstration tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. We have power in numbers and, there is so much hope and power in, coming out and saying this is like completely unjust and disgusting and we're not going to stand for it. And being like, sometimes people can be worried about taking extra precautions or being worried about that, but really it's just about protecting you and the people around you. We'll have information in our show notes. We'll put a link to the rally, and for people who want to come, it is today at Flinders Street at 5 p.m. But thank you so much, Renee, for coming on the show and,
thanks for having me.
Work for organising a really important rally today.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. See you tonight.
Thank you. And that was Renee, a Nam-based organiser who joined me to discuss the rally against Israeli President Isaac Herzog's visit to Nam at the Melbourne Convention Exhibition Centre. And if you want to join the rally, it is today at 5 p.m. at Flinders Street Station. It follows the amazing nationwide action that happened on Monday, as well as, sadly, the horrific violence that we saw coming out of Sydney. But there is so much precaution and support that we can take, and we have so much power in numbers.
Amazing. Yes. And thank you, Inez, for that interview. I just wanted to take the opportunity to read from Melbourne Activist Legal Support statement today about Victoria Police exerting special powers. So the special powers notice for special powers that have been granted to Victoria Police under the Terrorism Community Protection Act 2003 are in force from 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. today, the 12th of February, 2026. And they apply in two areas that have not been published within that window of time between 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. today, the 12th of February. Victoria Police have told a judge that they will place A3 placards on the boundaries of these areas 30 minutes prior to the invited guests arriving to the area. And these special powers are intended to prevent and respond to terrorist acts, not to repress or control protests. But of course, there is a lot of discretion in that interpretation, and in the heat of the moment, it's very difficult to assume that police are going to be making those distinctions. So Melbourne Activist Legal Support observers will be monitoring any use of these powers against activists. In those areas, which again have not been announced, the police will be able to stop and search any person, vehicle, and possessions without a warrant and seize items found in certain circumstances. And they can compel your name and address without a reason within those two areas. They're also able to move a vehicle in the area if they believe it's a danger to other vehicles or persons in that area, if it's causing or likely to cause traffic congestion there, or if it's hindering the exercise of special powers in that area. And police are also able to place a cordon around the target area or any part of it. And Mals has noted that it is an offence not to comply with a direction or to hinder or obstruct police exercising a special power. Now, they have much more information available on their Instagram. That is at Melb Activist Legal on Instagram. And that includes information about what to do and what to expect if you're searched or directed to do something, and information about your right to protest. So for legal advice or support, you can head to mals.au/contact/legal. And we encourage people to keep an eye out for legal observers who will be wearing pink vests at the rally.
Yes, and medic vests are usually green as well. So pink for legal observers, green for medics. Previously, the rally you might have seen was at 3 p.m. at Southern Cross, right near Melbourne Convention Exhibition Centre. It's not there anymore. It is at 5 p.m. at Flinders Street. If you were at the Monday rally, it's at the same location. So that's really important. And obviously, we will have information from Fitzroy Legal Service about if you're going to a protest, what can you do to protect yourself, as well as the Melbourne Activist Legal Service as well. I will just say that, you know, with heightened surveillance, and obviously this is not legal advice, but heightened surveillance, probably good to wear a mask. And also, if you want to just take extra precaution, have a friend or a lawyer's number just written on your arm. Hopefully nobody has to use that, but just in case, people take phones off you or belongings, which police sometimes are known to do, it's important to have that physically on your person.
Yep. Mm. And for information, for developments, you can follow Melbourne Activist Legal at Melb Activist Legal on Instagram, where I'm sure they will be posting more information as it becomes available. Stay safe, take care of yourselves and those around you, and remember that the greatest safety is in numbers. And as Renee said, the goal is to really show, en masse that this is not acceptable, that we won't stand for the invitation of, Herzog to so-called Australia, which is complicit in Israel's genocide and also, the ongoing genocide of First Nations peoples here. You're listening to Thursday Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and it is 8:07 in the morning.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Now, I just wanted to remind folks that this week on 3CR, it is Subscriber Drive. And subscribing to 3CR, it's not the same as making a donation during Radiothon. It's actually signing up to be part of the 3CR community. It means that you can get involved in the station's governance. It means that you have more of a say as somebody who is, a paid member of the 3CR radio community. Now, we know that not everybody can afford to pay the full subscription rate, and that's so fine. We have concession rates as well for subscribers. You can head to 3cr.org.au to find out more about subscribing. And for all of those programmers and people that have already subscribed to 3CR, make sure your subscription is up to date. If you haven't organized a recurring subscription, then now's the time to head to 3cr.org.au and make sure that you're locked in for another year. It is especially important this year, in our 50th anniversary year, to sign up, subscribe to 3CR, and, you know, show that you are not just a part of this station now, but that you want to see 3CR here for another 50 years, 100 years, 3CR, 200 years. We're going to be here forever, thanks to the support of all of you wonderful people. So again, ensure that you are subscribed. It is $40 concession, $80 waged, but we also have $150 subscriptions for bands or organizations. And then finally, you can do a $300 solidarity subscription if you are feeling particularly generous. So head to 3cr.org.au or call the station during business hours on 03-9419-8377. It is 8:10 in the morning and you're tuned in to Thursday Breakfast.
If you're a renter with problems such as repairs, getting your bond back, negotiating a rent hike, or facing eviction, it helps to know your rights. For free information and advice on renting, you can visit Tenants Victoria at www.tenants.vic.org.au, Arnica Legal at www.anikalegal.com, or contact your nearest community legal centre. The government is planning to demolish and redevelop high-rise public housing towers in Melbourne. If you're living in a public housing tower and need free legal advice about your options, find your nearest community legal centre at www.fclc.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Now, if you're just joining us on Thursday Morning Breakfast, on the show so far, we've heard from Leliana from the Community Defence Marshalling System talking about the fight for justice by Bangladeshi migrant workers who have been subjected to appalling treatment by Malaysian company Mediseram, which is a glove mold supplier of NARM-based corporation Ansell. And Leliana also talked about the Slavery in the Supply Chain rally, which is coming up on Saturday, the 14th of February at 5 p.m. at Ansell's head office, 678 Victoria Street in Richmond. And we were also joined by Emma Bennison, CEO of Disability Advocacy Network Australia, to understand more about the NDIA's adoption of AI for the development and review of NDIS plans. And just now we were joined by NARM-based Palestine organizer Renee to talk about today's rally against Israeli President Isaac Herzog in NARM. And the rally is going to be held today, Thursday, the 12th of February, from 5 p.m. at Flinders Street Station. And we also went through a bit of the important information that you need to know, including the expansion of police powers under terrorism legislation in two areas that have not yet been publicized. So to find out more information about your rights to protest, about legal considerations, you can head to Melbourne Activist Legal Support's Instagram. That's at Melb Activist Legal on Instagram, or to mals.au. That's their website, where you've also got information about how to access legal advice and support. And in the event that any incidents do occur at any rallies that you attend, attend in NARM. You can also send through evidence of those incidents. MALS compiles reports and puts out notices about any rally that they've had legal observers at. So it's an also really important way to continue documenting any violations if you do witness them. It is 8:14 in the morning, and we might do a weather check now. It's been kind of all over the shop. Yesterday was extremely hot and very rainy, and today we've had a significant temperature drop. So currently in NARM feels like 11.6 degrees, the temperature is 13.7, and we're looking at a max of 18 degrees with potentially a little drizzle. It's going to be a bit of a windy day and partly cloudy. And then as we head into the weekend, things will start heating up again. You are listening to Thursday Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Over five decades, we've been home to hundreds of shows, thousands of broadcasters and guests, and hundreds of thousands of listeners.
This February, we're aiming for 1,000 subscribers.
It's just $40 concession, $80 full.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
ReCR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Quando sono solo in casa e solo devo restare.
Benvenuti, benvenuti al programma Radio Filet.
Mercoledì pomeriggio dalle 18:30 alle 19:30.
And for those who don't speak Italian, that's Wednesday evening, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m.
You'll hear from multi-generational Italian voices coming together to connect and learn and discuss Italian culture.
And politics.
And politics.
Radio File, building bridges between the diaspora.
The program will be part in Italian, part in English, so
practice your Italian or hone your listening skills.
Radio File, la voce alternativa della comunità italiana a Melbourne.
Tune in to 3CR 855 AM, or you can listen online, 3cr.org.au.
Radio File.
Don't have $1 million and still want to have a good education for your kid? Tune into the Dogs program. We are the defenders of government schools. 12 p.m. on Saturdays here on 3CR 855 and the AM dial podcast, streaming live on 3cr.org.au and 3CR digital. We defend government schools because they need it.
You're tuned in to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. It is just coming up to 8:17 in the morning, and we are now joined by Gunchamara Kire Wurrung and Japurung runner Sissy Austin, founder of the Take Back the Track movement, who is speaking with us about the ongoing fight to ensure the safety and bodily autonomy of women and gender diverse people running in public space in the lead up to Take Back the Track Day on Sunday, the 15th of February. Now, this Sunday marks the second year of Take Back the Track, which has grown from a community-led action into a nationwide movement advocating for the right of women and gender-diverse people to run without the fear of violence. And there are events planned in over 70 locations around the country. And you can find an event near you and register to run by heading to takebackthetrack.com/join-us. And also, you know, considering the impetus for Take Back the Track, fighting against gendered violence, if you do need to speak to someone for support, you can always call 1-800-RESPECT. That's 1-800-737-732. And also, Mob can call 13YARN on 139276 and Yarning Safe and Strong on 1-800-959-563. Good morning, Sissy. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Now, I understand that you started Take Back the Track in the wake of quite a traumatic personal experience when you were running near Ballarat 3 years ago. But I wanted to begin by asking what running means to you and how you made your way back to running after this incident.
Yeah, I absolutely love running. It is something that I've always enjoyed, and it's always been something that I've, retreated to as a form of self-care. It's connection to country, connection to body, mind, spirit. And yeah, I love running the longer distances too. You learn so much about the strength of your body and your mind when you push your body through those longer distances. So yeah, I could talk about my love for running forever, and I know that's like a shared love in so many women and gender diverse runners across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, what was it like to come back to running and to really, you know, lean back into it?
Yeah, after my assault whilst running, it took a healing journey. Absolutely, like I'm only human, and yeah, I went on quite a significant healing journey under the guidance of the Indigenous Marathon Project, and it took, you know, run after run after run, lots of tears, but yeah, just kind of being patient with myself and content at the end of the day in what I'd achieved, and also realistic about what I had experienced. But yeah, I love where I am in my healing journey now, where I'm leading this beautiful national movement that's actually bigger than what happened to me. It's like it's this growing collective national movement where I'm connected with so many women and gender diverse runners across the country that share the same love of running for me, and share that that same kind of, I guess, protection where we're saying that, you know, our love of running is so worthy of being protected from men's violence.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did want to ask about the importance of centering this reclamation of public space and of being visible by women and gender diverse runners as part of Take Back the Track, of being able to exercise safely in public.
Yeah, we have an absolute right to exercise wherever we want, at whatever time we want, in whatever we want. The last few weekends I've been selling our new t-shirts at a local market in my hometown, and even the visibility of the movement in a public space has been quite interesting, in lots of men coming up to us and saying, like, what tracks are you taking? And then when we talk about what Take Back the Track is, initially they'll say to us, like, oh, but you know, why are women exercising wearing this? And it's like, yeah, having those conversations to challenge those views that men withhold. But yeah, back to your question around exercising in public spaces, like it's our right. And so I think that Take Back the Track it's about highlighting the real reality that faces women and gender diverse runners exercising in public spaces, but it's also a movement that's empowering women and gender diverse runners to say, actually, we belong here on the track and we're not going anywhere. And within that is like calling on men as allies to be by our sides in this movement and take it upon themselves and hold a responsibility within the movement as well to call out men's violence towards women and gender diverse runners exercising in public spaces.
Yeah, and I guess that really leads into whether you have any messages for men in our audience about their role in shifting the culture of gender-based violence in so-called Australia. Because beyond just showing up on Sunday, how do we ensure that a commitment to change is practiced rather than simply paid lip service?
Yeah, and our movement is consistently calling on men to join us as allies in the movement. They have a massive responsibility in ending violence towards women and gender diverse runners. They have, if not more, actually of a responsibility than us. And I call on men to, you know, listen first to women and gender diverse runners, like hear our stories, hear our reality as runners, and
you know, share, look at the Take Back the Track website, our socials, everything's there. Women and gender diverse runners are really sharing and being really generous in their sharing. And so, yeah, men really need to meet us halfway in listening and then taking the responsibility to then share it with their male peers. And sorry, I also really, something that I often talk about is men being aware of and reflective of how they move on the track themselves, and really reflecting on their own male privilege, and how do you move on the track? Do you whiz past a women and gender diverse runners? Do you give us a wave? Do you give us a smile? There's so many different ways that men can actually be allies on their daily run, beyond, you know, National Take Back the Track Day. So
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, are they acting in physical space like you are a peer when you're running? Because, you know, there are so many ways that, you know, this is a bit of a different comparison, but as a, like, gender diverse cyclist, you're made to feel more or less welcome exercising in those spaces, you know, by the amount of space that others take up near you. And so it is so much thinking about the way that you shift your embodied practice to show that everybody is welcome here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I just wanted to ask about how the event has grown since it first ran last year. So what is what does Take Back the Track look like in 2026?
Yeah, I can't. It's like we're in the lead up to our second National Take Back the Track Day, and even last year, like the way that it resonated with women and gender diverse runners across the country was quite astounding. And in leading into this second National Take Back the Track Day, the momentum has just been palpable. Like I hear. Yeah, just so many. I have the privilege as the founder to like hear from so many event organisers across the country about, you know, why they're hosting an event in their own community. We have over now 100 registrations across the entire country, towns that I had never even heard of that are hosting Take Back the Track events. So, yeah, the ripple effect has been absolutely massive. And, yeah, it's reflective of why there needs to be a movement such as Take Back the Track.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to wrap up, how can people register to run and support the movement to end gendered violence? And is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, you can register. We've got an incredible website, takebackthetrack.com, where we have the public organised events listed on the website, which individuals are welcome by event organisers to attend. You can register your own running group via our registration form on the website, or you can register your own solo run and dedicate your run to the vision of Take Back the Track this Sunday on National Take Back the Track Day.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Sissy. I really appreciate you coming on and, so much support for the incredible work that you've been doing.
Thank you so much.
And that was Gunichamara, Kire Warong and Jap Warong runner Sissy Austin, founder of Take Back the Track, which is a movement that is fighting to ensure the safety and bodily autonomy of women and gender diverse people running in public space. And we talked about Take Back the Track Day, which is coming up on Sunday, the 15th of February. And you can find out more information about events near you and to register a run by heading to takebackthetrack.com. And also you can follow Take Back the Track on socials, on Instagram at take.back.the.track. You are tuned in to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. And we're coming up to the end of our show now. So just a quick whiz through what we've covered. First up, we heard from Leliana from the Community Defence Marshalling System about the fight for justice by Bangladeshi migrant workers employed by Medisaram, a supplier of Corporation Ansell, and the slavery and supply chain rally this this Saturday at 5 p.m. at Ansell's head office in Richmond.
And after that, we heard from Emma Bennison, CEO of Dana Disability Advocacy Network, who unpacked concerns about NDIA's adoption of AI for the development and review of NDIS plans.
And then we heard from Renee to discuss today's rally against Israeli President Isaac Herzog today at 5 p.m. at Flinders Street Station, following Monday's National Day of Action and what we saw in Sydney.
Yes, and then finally we heard about Take Back the Track from Sissy Austin. Now, for today's rally, we'll have information in our show notes. We'll have information for all of the events, but in particular from Melbourne Activist Legal Support and from Fitzroy Legal Service with just information about special powers that are being invoked by VicPol and how you can keep yourself safe.
And you can also see that on our Thursday Breakfast Instagram page if you want the direct links.
Amazing. At 3CR Thursday Breakfast on Instagram. And remember, subscribe. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical independent bookseller and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs in the basement of Trades Hall in Victoria Street, Carlton. Or check them out at nibs.org.au to find more information about upcoming discussions and events.